the inaugural podcast of Weekly Title. I'm Joshua Paul Kane. My guest is Bill Bloom, author of Tales of the 10th Great Vampire Hunter, published by Fable Press. Thank you for joining me, Bill.
It is my pleasure.
So, what's the pitch? Tell us about the book.
The pitch. For getting keep, hunting vampires is easy. It's high school that might get them killed. That's my pitch. And it starts off pretty, you know, with a lot of fun. He's basically this teenage vampire hunter. I went for as realistic a, you know, scenario as I could. So, yes, a teenager made perfect sense. And oddly enough, it actually did. And but he starts off proving pretty well until he gets recognized by one of his teachers, and it leads to a big old conspiracy of vampires hunting down his teacher. And as he digs deeper, he just gets into all sorts of trouble.
Well, I've read it, and it is very good. It's funny, and like you said, it's grounded in reality. It's Richmond, so people who are familiar with the city will recognize some of the landmarks.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my aspirations. You know, Stephen King has Maine. Richmond's my baby.
Very good. So I like to get into prep. Like, for example, your routine. What's your writing routine like?
Oh, my routine. You know, I hate to say, I'm such a cliche. I am a cafe writer. I've got to do it. For me, it's like guilting myself into actually getting work done. I've also, back when I was younger, I would write it late at night. Can't do it anymore. It doesn't matter if I work overnights or if I'm, you know, on a day off. My ideal writing time is like 8 in the morning. It sucks. I hate being a daytime writer, but it's what I am now, and I've had to accept that. But it's like I'll go out at the as early as I can in the morning, get into a cafe, set up, and I will go as far as I can. Sometimes I can crank out a few hundred. Sometimes I'll get about a little more than 1,000, and then I'll have those wondrous days where the floodgates open, and it's like, you know, I might punch out several thousand, but those are rare. And those days, sometimes I'll decide I've worn out my welcome at the cafe I'm in and then relocate to another place, like Capitol Ale House, have a beer, write some more. It's a nice way to live when you can get away with it.
I agree. I like cafes, too, and diners.
Oh, yeah.
Good place to find writers.
This is true, too. Oddly enough, I don't run into as many, though, as you would think, though. I think I just seem to target odd places that haven't really been, you know, scoped out yet. Although this book was primarily written in a cafe that no longer really exists.
Oh, really?
It was at Elwood's Cafe.
Oh.
And I did a lot of writing there. And in fact, the very last part of the book, the last sequence, I remember the very corner where I was sitting in that place writing it. And I had to leave to go home and finish it because I was getting all teary-eyed. You know, it was just miserable. And so I finally had to go home. And now that place is no longer there. It's been changed into this place called Burger Buck, which is really good, though. Just not for writing.
Oh, okay. I think I've heard of that place.
Oh, it's good.
I'll have to try it. And write. Maybe they should have writing-themed burgers.
Oh, I already doubt that.
What was the genesis of the story? Do you like vampires? Do you typically read vampire stories?
I actually used to read a lot more vampire fiction. I don't read as much as I used to. And for me, it's not a lot of my reasons I don't now is because I'm not as interested in the vampire. I'm interested in the guy who's crazy enough to hunt him.
Okay.
To me, I kind of approach vampires from the standpoint of they're bad guys. We're their lunch. You don't date chickens. You don't date cows, except in certain foreign countries where they have very odd habits.
Right.
And maybe a few, you know, remote locations in the United States. Right. But, you know, generally speaking, you don't go out looking for a date when you're hungry. I've never been able to wrap my brain around that. I like having the vampire as the classic bad guy.
Right.
So
I agree. I think they're monsters, and I like the stories that depict them that way. Is there a vampire writer or character that you particularly like?
Oddly enough, the biggest influence for this book, in terms of a character, didn't come from a book.
Oh, okay.
It actually came from the TV show Burn Notice. I loved Michael Weston. And the fact that he brings a grounded view to spy work, that was what I wanted to do with the vampire hunter. I said, I want to take my guy, and I want to make him as realistic as I possibly can. I want him to be equipped with the kind of weapons that he could reasonably walk around with. You know, I wanted him to actually be able to do the kind of leg work that was realistic.
Mm-hmm.
I get really annoyed when I see anything in TV or in books where it's like they like just happen to find a license plate and we'll find out who the owner is. You can't get that information. It's illegal to get that information, and most anyone who has the access is not going to risk their job to give it to any old pal. It doesn't work that way.
That's more of the realism then.
Yes.
Yeah, and I appreciate that too. I like it. I think in many stories, even if it's supernatural, it's nice to have that grounding realist. You know, there's only so much a reader or a viewer can take as far as stretching the premise.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree with that. In fact, the biggest thing I ran into in this book was I finally reached a point at where I needed to figure out, okay, a person who's going to actually be hanging around with vampires and letting them feed off of him, what are they going to do dietary-wise to try and make up for this? What do people who donate blood often do? And so I really got hung up on that for a while, and it's like that actually led to what amounted to about a year gap in the middle of writing that book.
Wow.
I was petrified that I'd written half the book, and I was terrified I was never going to finish the other half of it, because I'm like, I knew what I'd written in the first half was great stuff. But can I pick it back up and run with it? And I finally got it going, and it's like I had to basically plant my butt in the chair and force it out, and thankfully once I got going, it was...
Oh, well, it has a great pace to it, and again, it's very funny, nice turns. I laughed out loud, and I just really enjoyed it. It's a nice departure from much of what I've read recently, vampire-wise, which is often much more serious, and but at the same time, cheesy and unbelievable in ways you don't want it to be unbelievable.
I was going
to
say, I think I loved Interview with the Vampire. Mm-hmm. I loved The Vampire Lestat. Great books. I mean, I remember reading those when I was in high school and college. And I think in many ways what those books did for the vampire genre was fantastic. But unfortunately, it's kind of gone a little too far. Mm-hmm. We've reached the point where everyone's like, they want to have a Lestat. They want to have Louis, that brooding, sexy dude, you know, that... Oh, yes, he's evil and bad, but damn, he's good-looking. Why doesn't he fang me? It's like, I mean, I pretty much de-sexed the vampire in this book.
It's targeted for a teen audience, correct?
It is.
Okay.
One of my...
Not that it has anything that I would think would be offend a parent.
I will say for, you know, the parents, I would, you know, it depends on the maturity level of the teenager.
Yes.
I actually let my 12-year-old son read this. Mm-hmm. I let my 13-year-old daughter read it.
Right.
But at the same time, I know the level of immaturity. I know it was material they could handle. But, I mean, one of my main passions in writing at this point is born out of my children. Mm-hmm. I've seen, both my kids are really good readers, and I've seen as my daughter has gotten older, there's this wealth of material to read within the young adult market. It's not really there for the boys, and it is a very complicated issue. It's not something you can simply go, why aren't you publishers putting out material? You can't simply, you know, be like, well, why aren't more writers doing this? And you, at the same time, even the boys bear some blame. It's like, you know, if they don't read it, you know, there's not going to be a reason to produce it. So one of my goals is to write the kind of book that, you know, I would be okay with my son reading and that my son would want to read. And I was actually very relieved when he did finally read it on his own. I did pressure him, and he was like, "Dad, it's actually a pretty good book."
That's high praise.
It was relieved. Because he has no filter.
And, you know, it is not explicit. It's not gratuitous in any way. So I think it's a safe book for...
I wanted to emphasize with Gideon his brains. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, the majority of the book, even though it can get violent and it can get very gritty, the book itself is really about how he uses his brains to hunt down the vampires in order to kill them.
Right.
It's not glorifying so much in the act of the kill itself. It's more about the fact that he is just, you know, he is just ridiculously smart.
When you were writing the novel, did you write alone or did you have a writing group that you would submit chapters to, or you just wrote it all the way through and then gave it to some friends, or?
I wrote the sucker all the way through before I let anyone see it.
Okay.
I let my wife get a little bit of a look at the early material, but she actually did not finished reading the entire book. Never got saw the whole manuscript until after it was in print.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I did have one friend I did turn to, and I had her read it. And actually, a lot of her advice did make it into the book. Mm-hmm. This was one book where I'm very tough on myself when I write. And I know I do the stuff they say you shouldn't do. They always tell you, don't, you know, obsess over that word that you're trying to find for it. Don't try to get the sentence just perfect. Just get it out. No, that doesn't work for me because I will sit the entire time, the entire rest of the way going, oh, God, what's wrong with that? And I can't do that. I have to get it right and then I can move forward.
So it's like a block.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just can't get around it until it's resolved.
It's one of those things, I very much try to let the characters lead me where the story is going to go, but at the same time, part of that means that I need to make sure that where I have been is going to appropriately lead to what's going to ever come next. And so if I don't actually get things straight, it's not like I can start continuing to write the book without knowing for sure what's going to be locked in stone leading up to it.
Okay. So do you outline when you start?
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
With this book,
yeah,
very little outlining. The only stuff I knew going in is I knew a little bit of the backstory of the main character and his family. Mm-hmm. I knew about, in fact, it's ironic, I know his dad and his grandfather's first names, and then I realized as I was sitting down to start the second book, I never actually named them in the first.
Oh.
Which is kind of funny.
Grandfather.
And I was very careful in how I chose the names, because they all have meanings. Gideon means warrior, for example, so that's why I chose that. But it's, you know, so these things were very, those were thought out. But in terms of plotting, I had a rough idea of what I wanted to do. I started the book, and it's like very quickly I realized where it was going to go. Mm-hmm. Once I started introducing certain characters, and I realized what was going to happen with them, particularly one of Gideon's best friends, as soon as I introduced that friend, I almost knew immediately what his fate was going to be. And knowing that was what really made me capable of writing the book. Mm-hmm. At that point, gave me the momentum I needed. As long as I know where I'm going, even if I don't know how I'm going to get there, it gives me enough focus to write a cohesive story.
Mm-hmm. What was the most difficult part of writing the book? Is there a scene or a character that you just couldn't get a handle on for a while? Or is there anything else that might have just...
Honestly, the research. Mm-hmm. A lot of this book draws on my experience as a 911 dispatcher, so that came pretty easily to me. But when I got stuff that I didn't know right off, mm-hmm. stuff like, you know, what kind of dietary habits do, you know, blood donors follow and that kind of thing, I had to really, it was like that really hung me up for a while. And so I was like Googling, I was like making phone calls, I actually called the Red Cross at one point. They were actually not very helpful. Which I'm still not quite sure why.
I just got a call from them today. You donate once and then they're after you tenaciously. They're after my blood.
Bloodsuckers, man, I tell you. That actually was one of the toughest things for me, but the other thing was finding the time to write.
Okay.
The reason I had a year gap in there, mm-hmm. is that usually about a month out each summer, my kids go down to visit my parents out of state. And so during that month, I would try to take as much time off from work as I could, mm-hmm. and I would hit the cafes and write. This is one of those times where I'm not just writing in the morning. I hit it in the morning. Okay. If I really got it going, I'm pushing it until like, you know, midnight.
Oh, wow.
And so it's like, you know, I had some days where it's like, yeah, I would start off at, you know, Elwood's Cafe. I might work my way to Cafe Catura, and then from there I would go to Capital L, which is open until about 1:30 in the morning, and serve food really late, so I could keep it going. So that was how that happened. I actually wrote it over a period of 2 months in that sense.
Wow.
Yeah. My work schedule does not lend itself well to writing, which is part of the challenge, and it has also been a challenge even in trying to get other work produced since then.
It's hard having a full-time job and break at the same time.
Oh my God, it sucks. It's one of those things that also, I keep the vampire hours. Mm-hmm. I work overnights. And now that I'm pushing, you know, 41, oh man, it started to take its toll. I was talking to my wife the other day, and I'm like, you know, I might have to start coming off of this shift because it's not working too well, which stinks because I actually really like those hours, but to be able to produce the writing, I'm going to have to get off that shift.
What do you, generally speaking, not just this novel in particular, but what do you enjoy most about the writing process? Is it the research? Is it writing a scene? Is it developing a character?
For me, the thing I love the most is when the story becomes so alive that all the answers end up coming from the story itself, and the stuff you've already put in there and you didn't even have a clue it was going to be there. I've got a short story I'm producing for an anthology that my publisher is doing. It's going to be an anthology from all the writers in the publishing house. And the focus of my story is going to be the Richmond Zombie Walk.
Uh-huh.
And Gideon is going to be dealing with the situation in which there are these two vampires who have decided to invade the zombie walk. They're going to actually do it at night in my story, even though they don't in reality. And so he's having to go down there and try and figure out which of these freaks out here are my vampires that I need to hunt and kill. And so he's looking for them, and he's looking for them, and as I'm writing it, and I finally get to the moment, I'm like, I've got to let him figure this out now, because there's no way he's going to figure it out later. It suddenly dawned on me, immediately I went, of course, that's exactly what kind of costume they would do. It's the only thing that makes sense, and it made sense the entire time. And it was obvious, but I'm not going to tell you, because I want you to buy the adoption.
Of course. See. Now, once you've completed the manuscript and you had it reviewed, did you take it to an editor, or did you shop it around first?
Shopped it around.
Mm-hmm.
I shopped it around pretty hard. It was painful because I also discovered, to my horror, that vampire is a four-letter word with most agents.
Yeah.
And publishing houses. It's just the market is very glutted.
Sure.
And even though I know and I firmly believe that my book does bring something different to the market, not only that, but the fact it's not technically a vampire book.
Right.
It's a vampire hunter book. But I also completely respect that from a marketing perspective, that's not an argument you can make to the customer.
Right, right.
And in that sense, I appreciated the challenge I was facing very quickly. And so when I did finally find my publisher and one that was interested in it, I was actually quite floored by that point. I'd gotten almost close to 60 rejections.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do you keep those slips?
I do have a folder in my email, because it's almost all email now,
right,
which is wild to me. But yeah, it's how much that's changed in just a decade. But yeah, I have a chart in a Word document where I list every person I've pitched, I list every person I might pitch, I list when I sent the query letter, I list if I got second base, meaning they asked for a partial.
Right.
I had one, I got to third base, she wanted the full manuscript.
Oh man.
I didn't get to home plate.
Oh,
oh man, that was brutal, because there were so many things. I was looking at that agent, I was like, oh my god, she's perfect for me. And in that sense, I quickly discovered agent hunting is exactly like dating. I don't understand what happened. She was perfect for me. She was into Star Wars. She even had a lightsaber, man. I don't understand why it didn't work out. And
sounds like a good analogy.
It's a painful analogy. I met my wife almost in it, like it was like the I went on two dates with one girl before her and then found my wife. God decided to make up for it in hunting for an agent publisher.
Yeah. Well, you've got the better deal there.
Yes.
Now you get picked up by Fable Press.
Yeah, I picked up by Fable Press, and actually the editing process was not done. I was amazed at how little I had to change for them. They did catch a few things, though, that I was very glad they did.
Sure.
That actually was kind of reassuring, too, because it let me know this wasn't some fly-by-night press. They were actually very serious about, wanting to publish my book.
Right.
Even though they were a very small publishing house. And so that was kind of cool. And it was neat to be able to kind of take the suggestions they had and run with them.
Okay. What about the cover? Did you have input on the cover?
I actually had a lot of input on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
We had kicked around titles, although that's kind of becoming a sticking point. It might even have to change. That's another matter altogether. However, when we thought of the title, Tales of a 10th Grade Vampire Hunter, we realize that the title alone really conveys that, one, it's about vampires, mm-hmm. and that, two, it's about a vampire hunter, mm-hmm. and three, that you're dealing with a teenager. So the cover didn't need to show any of that. It needed to show something else, and we realized that that was an opportunity to kind of show off Gideon's quirks.
Oh.
Gideon Keep is... One part of his shtick is that he was born on a Friday the 13th, and so he is obsessed with luck and good luck charms. He has a shirt that he wears that has a red bat on it, because in China, red bats are considered good luck. He's searching for, like, a rabbit's foot, a real rabbit's foot, mind you, for almost the entire book.
Right.
And so I was like, you know, that's what we want on the cover. We want to show, like, you know, his gear, his good luck charms. There's a desk calendar that shows Friday the 13th on it. And so there was a lot of thought that went into that desk.
Well, I'm glad they were accommodating.
They actually shocked me. I didn't even have to ask to have the input. They actually came to me for the input.
Oh, excellent.
This is one of the benefits of a small press.
Mm-hmm.
And they even now, even after the fact, they've been very accommodating, which has been really
Where
nice.
Are they based?
They are based in New England.
New England, okay. Now that they have, they accepted your book, they put it together... Distribution, how does that work? Is that handled entirely by them, or is that something you have to have a part in?
It's kind of, well, as I say, this is one of those weird publishing houses. They are taking advantage of print-on-demand,
okay.
as well as e-publishing. They do not do it as like a traditional press.
Okay.
So now the downside is with the form of print-on-demand they are using, print-on-demand being they don't have a book actually printed and put together until someone actually has paid to have it done.
Okay.
This means they don't have to do like a run of 5,000 copies and then find a place to store 5,000 copies. This was the biggest challenge of self-publishing back in the day, and even for small publishing houses. This reduces our cost extensively.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for me to get into a bookstore, though, it complicates things. You can't simply return a print-on-demand book,
right.
whereas with traditional publishing, if the book doesn't sell and it's, you know, just collecting dust on the bookshelves, they ship it back to the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
Bookstore can't do that for print-on-demand.
Okay.
Once it's there, it's there. So you have to have a bookstore that is willing to take the gamble on you that this will not collect dust.
Okay.
I've been fortunate with one of the bookstores in town that they actually were interested in that, who's a big promoter, found a bookstore, a big promoter of local writers, and so
they are, yeah.
She let me put the book in there, and she actually became a real advocate for it because she liked the book. Sincerely liked it, which was a real boon to me. As a result, I have had to buy a lot of copies of the book and then take them to the bookstore myself so that she would have them.
Right.
And so it was like an expense for me on the first part, but, you know, it makes up for it on the other end.
What do you think your investment did? Not an actual figure, but have you put up a lot of money, do you feel, or do you think it was fairly inexpensive to get this far?
It was expensive, but not in the place you might think.
Oh.
The place that was expensive was probably all the food I ate at the cafe. No, I can't just go in there and have a coffee and a roll. No, I'm having to go for like a breakfast sandwich.
I see.
So yeah, there's a lot of money that probably went into my stomach. I am still having expenses related to it, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on a book trailer, and I'm actually very close to getting that put together. I've got it's not too expensive. It's, you know, I'm producing the graphics. I've had a local actor who's in high school. He's provided the voice. He makes him the official voice for Gideon Keep now.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is kind of neat. And I've got another young gentleman who's a musician. He's actually in college, I think, now. And he's going to be doing an electric guitar piece for the trailer. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be a real short piece, but my publisher actually was a big advocate of doing it. If you're going to do it, make it short, aim for around 30 seconds. Mine's going to be pushing around 40.
All right. Well, good luck to that. I look forward to seeing it. What about the platform? Do you have a website? What do you do to promote yourself?
Platforms are where I've been weak. I do have a website, and I actually had a website even beforehand for my short stories, which made me feel horribly vain at first. I mean, I put it off because it's like, you know, I didn't feel like a real writer. I'm like, all I've got is some short stories that have been published out there. You know, it feels like I'm just trying to make something out of nothing there. But the truth was, I finally realized after a short while, I need to do this, because how do I expect other people to take me seriously as a writer if I don't show that I take myself seriously as a writer? It wasn't, it was, in that sense, it was not an act of vanity. It was an act of necessity, mm-hmm. which made it easier to go about doing. For me, it was easier to do as well, though, because I've had a lot of graphic arts experience. I have a lot of good experience with web design, too, mm-hmm. and so I was able to build a website myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
And you're on Twitter, right?
I am on Twitter, but I will be the first to admit I probably get a lot more mileage out of my Twitter account for fantasy football than I do for pushing my book. That's where the social media is the part where I'm having a lot of difficulty. Mm-hmm. Part of it is because of the hours I keep.
Sure.
It's one of those things that while I'm at work, I cannot be on that social media. That does not fly, and especially with the type of job I have as 911 dispatcher.
Right. Don't do that.
No, can't do that. So I can't tweet, I can't get on Facebook. I will say I have tried to get a little creative with this, though. Mm-hmm. I did decide to create a Tumblr account for Gideon.
Okay.
Gideon Keep has his own Tumblr account that I use. So it's like if you want to see what goes through the mind of a teenage vampire hunter, you can go to Gideon's Tumblr page, and there's a link to it from my website. So that was kind of fun. It's like every now and then I'll go on Tumblr and I'll start looking around for stuff. It's mostly comic book stuff. But, it was a lot of fun. And so I've been doing that. I've also got a Pinterest page that is, for me, where it's like I show you some of the stuff that influenced me, mm-hmm. some of the stuff that, that random stuff I'll see out there that gives me a good laugh that kind of reminds me of the book.
Okay.
There's a picture of a bottle of Febreze on there, for example, which if you read the book, you will understand why a bottle of Febreze makes total sense on a vampire hunter board.
Yeah, I remember now. That's funny. when you started this, did you have an idea of what success would be? And have you achieved that success, or are you still working on it?
Still working on it. I would say, for me, success is going to be the big... I'm still aiming for the big dream, which is to eventually get a book out there that one of the major houses will take on, where you have an advance. But at the same time, you know what? I am surprised at how happy I am with what I have gotten with this book. I would not say it's not been successful, and that's the good news. It wasn't the success I planned on, but it's still a success for me that I had not expected. I'm actually in a position to where I've gotten a book of mine out there. It's gotten a good response from the people who've read it, and the publisher wants more. Really, when you get down to it, even if it's a small press, even if it's a print-on-demand press, it's not something that I can easily get to, say, a Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. That's still pretty damn cool.
I agree. Especially, I think a great measure is having your son wanting to read it.
I was actually going to point that out, yes. Having my kids actually read the book and like it was a huge treat.
I believe at that age, they're very picky.
The funny thing was, I even got the other end of the spectrum. My parents, who believe me, are so not... not the audience for this book, actually read it, and they were like, it's actually a really well-written book. You can tell you know what you're doing. I was like, wow, holy cow, that keeps my parents.
Where was this affirmation early on?
I'm not going to go there, because this is being recorded.
we'll just wind up. You're working on a novel, the sequel. Is there anything else you're working on?
I am actually working. I'm actually agent hunting still, because that would be nice to have that, because agents would potentially provide money in terms of, selling the rights to, Hollywood and that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Right.
That's really where you can make some money, mm-hmm. and that's really what I'm really hoping to do. That book I'm shopping around right now is something totally different, totally unrelated. It's still focused on YA mm-hmm. and very boy-focused. Again, that's one of the things I'm very passionate about, because I just feel like if we're not producing it, we can't expect the rest of the folks to fall in line. And so that book is kind of a traditional fantasy setting take on Red Badge of Courage.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun to write that book.
Oh, very nice.
I wrote that book during the time in which I was shopping around Tales of the Tenth Great Vampire Hunter. And so it was funny because I had almost given up on Tales actually selling. Mm-hmm. And so that was what I was using to keep my energy going.
Right.
And now, so it's like I have that. I'm trying to shop that, and at the same time, I'm having to work on producing the sequel to Tales of the Tenth Great Vampire Hunter. So it's like, oh my God!
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you. It's a nice problem to have.
Yes. Well, I guess we are done. Pick up Tales of a Tenth Great Vampire Hunter by Bill Blum.